Back here, first things first, joined by former Pro Bowler Bart Scott.
Man, we got a new sponsor in Ram Truck. We got new people watching us, Bart. I need you on your best behavior today.
Oh, I'm all about that smutty. You know I'm going to be right when you tell me about the sponsor.
Okay, all right.
Can I get in on this?
Yeah, man.
I'm from Detroit. My family,
We're not even in on it, baby.
Absolutely.
I give you the triple. I give you
best
the,
behavior.
I give you the A plan, baby. Give you a discount on the rides if you need one.
Oh, okay. Appreciate that.
Well,
Motor Train Truck of the Year, Dodge Ram.
Here
new
we go.
Of the show.
We are officially a quarter of the way through the season, Bart, and Russell Wilson has quietly led his Seahawks to 3 wins. So far this year, only Patty Mahomes has a higher passer rating. When asked about his quarterback, Pete Carroll couldn't say enough.
I think he's off to his best start ever. I don't know what it looks like numbers-wise, but I think it is. I don't think he's ever been more accurate than he's been and more consistent and in command of everything, you know. So I think he's off to a great start. I mean, I don't care how big the numbers are. I'm not talking about how many yards or whatever. I'm just, his play has just been really, really sharp.
You agree with Pete Carroll, Bart? Is Russell Wilson the best quarterback basically in the NFC?
I think you can make an argument for that. I think Drew Brees will want to have something to say about that, and the blessing in disguise is that he got hurt so he won't have that tired arm later in the season. But Russell Wilson, I think, is responsible for more of the productivity of his team than any other team. They have a particular style. And I like to think of the Seattle Seahawks kind of like the Patriots of the West, because no matter what they have, they're always going to be in it. They're just a great run organization. But when you take that much of the pie like Russell Wilson has taken, you have to be an elevator. And I think he's an elevator. He's not a stabilizer. He's not a guy that comes in and just holds on to the steering wheel and try not to mess it up. He's a guy that's realized who he is, and he understands when to take over in the game. You know, he waits till the perfect opportunities, the situations to be able to use his athleticism. He doesn't put himself in harm's way. He makes sure that he doesn't take hits, even though he's an athletic quarterback. But the problem is that they're going to run into when they play against the elite teams in the NFC. He doesn't have enough weapons on the outside. And they're throwing stuff against the wall. You know, they took a flyer on Metcalf. But he's not – nobody on his offense is going to strike fear in the opposing defenses, minds. You said this happened when they played Dallas last year, when they played a mirror image of themselves. He didn't have enough to be able to be elite, and he had to be special. You can't ask a quarterback to be special every play.
Well, so this is the reason that I was so high on Seattle going into the year. This is the reason that I think Russell Wilson's the most underrated player year in, year out in football. A down year for the Seahawks with Russell Wilson is 9 wins. That's the worst year they've had. Every other year they've made the playoffs, and every year he is the forgotten amongst the 5 best quarterbacks in football, which he is year in, year out. Is he the best quarterback in the NFC? Absolutely yes. Ooh. I'd like to say absolutely yes. I'd like to say Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Rodgers has to be better. And over the last 3 years, Russell Wilson has unequivocally been better. Drew Brees right now is injured, and you could make the argument that Russell Wilson certainly the last half of last year and over the last couple years has been neck and neck with Drew Brees. And the injury thing matters when you're comparing yourself to a guy who has never missed a single game due to injury. Dak Prescott, I know Dak's playing really well this year. If Russell Wilson were the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, they would be far and away the best team in the NFL. And so we talk about these other quarterbacks. We talked about Brady earlier, questionable offensive line, questionable weapons. Russell Wilson hadn't had a great offensive line in years. He lost Doug Baldwin from a receiving core that already had a lack of weapons. And he makes it work with Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and Disley, the tight end. I don't think he gets a coaching schematic advantage. They just run the ball, even if it's not effective with Chris Carson. And Russell Wilson is the reason that this is a great team, or at least a very good team, year in, year out. So right now, with Brees on the shelf, with Rodgers, again, not popping statistically thus far for the 3rd straight year, to me, absolutely, Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in his conference.
Yeah, I got to disagree with you on that. And even with Drew Brees, man, he's got an injured thumb, but he's done too much for too long,
yeah,
overcome too many obstacles to not say he's the class. And after that, I'm going with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers in a new offense, all right? He's not fully comfortable with everything they're doing. But if we're having a fantasy draft, a for-real draft, or whatever, I'm taking both of those guys over. And I don't care if you tell me, well, how long can they play? I don't care. Drew Brees can play a couple more years. Aaron Rodgers can play a whole handful of years. They are better at throwing the football than Russell. Russell's a great quarterback,
yeah,
a great leader. He finally has the team, because now, no Earl Thomas, no Richard Sherman, no Marshawn Lynch. He finally won that team over because it was a struggle for Russ. It was a struggle. He was not the leader of that football team. And there was some bumping of some heads in that locker room. And ultimately, Russell, because he's the quarterback and because he's going to play for a long time, and he is special at doing this. But I'm not going to all of a sudden, because Drew Brees has a dinged up thumb, I'm going to put him on the shelf. No, and because Aaron Rodgers has a new young head coach. No, both of those quarterbacks are still better than Russell Wilson. And Russell is a special, special player. He's a special leader. And you can see that with the consistency of them with that organization there in Seattle.
Well, when you think about the Seattle Seahawks, they have a style. They have a brand. And it's about, you know, ball control, limiting the possessions in the game, playing good defense, stout defense in the back. Now, they're taking some flyers on some guys, you know, like Ziggy Ansah. They made the trade for Clowney because they realized that they must, you know, be able to stay in ball games. But they also been in one of the weaker divisions for the, you know, previous years. You think about the Cardinals, you think about San Francisco last year. True. And they've been able to benefit from that and just kind of being able to win their division and be in striking distance all the time. But now Russell Wilson's going to have to do more, and the organization's going to have to hit on some, you know, they're going to have to find some hidden gems. We saw Michael Thomas become a hit. We say Alvin Kamara become a hit. You know, they have to find, because when you take that much of the pie, then you have your organization has to be 85% as far as decision making on who they're going to bring in. And you have to be big on development. You know, what I love about Pete Carroll and what he is, he's still a teacher. I think nowadays we have a lot of young coaches that come in and have their system and they expect you to already be a ready-made product. Pete Carroll is a developer of talent, and that's why they've been able to hold the fort. And when you lose an Earl Thomas, when you lose a Cam Chancellor, when you lose a Richard Sherman, you know, but going forward, I don't know if they have enough to be able to get past like the divisional round or the AFC championship, because they have to ugly it up. They have to muddy it up. If they get in a shooting contest, you know, a shootout, they can't win that because he don't have the weapons to get the productivity that they need.
Well, we talk about that he doesn't have the weapons. Over the last 3 years, no quarterback in football has more touchdown passes. He led the whole league in touchdowns 2 years ago, I believe it was. And this year, with the worst receiving core that he's had since he's been there, through 4 weeks, he has career high in touchdowns, career high in yards, career high in rating, career high in completion percentage, and he hasn't thrown a pick. I mean, he just keeps. Now, if you look at Pete Carroll,
he threw for 200 yards, Nick.
What?
Threw for 223.
Well, he's got
yards.
1,200 on the season, so he must have had some big games. If through four games, he's averaging 300 per game, and he had a 200-yard game in there. He had 400 in the loss to New Orleans. He had 300 against Pittsburgh, and against Arizona, the game you're talking about, he had 240. We can parse it if we want. Against Arizona, they didn't need him to throw the ball a bunch. They were dominating that game throughout. But Pete Carroll, year after year, says Russell Wilson's off to his best start, if you look back at the quotes. But year after year, it's true. Like, each year he raises the bar on his own level of performance, even if you pare away some of his talent. And so, listen, I think right now, I love Aaron Rodgers, my pick for MVP. Green Bay was my pick for the Super Bowl. But Russell Wilson over the last, not 4 weeks, over the last 3 years has been better than him.
But he lost 2 weeks ago to Teddy Bridgewater as a backup.
Yes.
At home.
Absolutely.
And so let alone is Drew Brees a better quarterback. Like, I don't believe New Orleans is going to go to Green Bay and beat Aaron Rodgers with Teddy Bridgewater. So for me, in the head-to-head, like, that's a huge indictment on Russell and on that offense.
You got to throw Carson Wentz in there a little bit, too. Carson Wentz, I think, is a good quarterback when he gets his weapons back. You know, he's the next, you know, to me, he's a close thing to Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I don't think he's in the league of Russ. Russ is a special guy.
Back here with Bart Scott. Talking Rams. On Sunday, Todd Gurley had a career low 5 carries. His quarterback, Jared Goff, meanwhile, had 68 pass attempts. 68. Bart, that's like almost 2 games worth. Gurley was asked about his limited touches. He said, I don't call the plays, bro. Like I say, I don't call the plays. I go out there and play. I block for Jared Goff. I run the ball, run the routes, whatever. Whatever the play call is, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do it just like everyone else is going to go out there and do their job. It's 11 people on the field. There's only one ball. Bart, can the Rams make another Super Bowl run with a restricted Todd Gurley?
Not at all, because I think New England showed the blueprint. You make sure you have 3 deep. You don't really honor the RPOs. You understand that you're going to have a form of motion every time. They're trying to grab your eyes. But at the root of it, they're a downhill running football team disguised as a, you know, gadget team. You see the same thing with, you know, the New Orleans Saints. They're a power running team, and they need their power back to be able to limit the throws and the attempts of Jared Goff. I think if you would give McVay some truth serum, he would say that Goff isn't a great quarterback. He's probably 15 and below as far as that. And people are starting to figure out, okay, well, McVay's giving the answers to the test in his ears. So let's hold our disguise for 15 seconds where the communication is cut off. You saw Todd Bowles really covering everybody up and putting everybody at the line of scrimmage, making him have to figure out where the coverage was coming from. And then I think they ran into, I think, the best offensive personnel in football. And I know that Jameis Winston kind of holds them back, but when you think of their, you know, Godwin, you think of Mike Evans, but what makes them unique is they have two great tight ends. So they were able to get in these packages. I saw more personnel and formation, CC, than I saw in a long time. I saw Trips, I saw Nub, I saw Bunch, I saw Snugs,
yeah,
I saw Free Wise.
And he's doing a good job.
And they did a good job in really containing Aaron Donald, who's off to a slow start. It seems like teams are catching up to him. Now, we know that he can turn it on because last year, you know, they were able to do that, but without Ndamukong Suh, I believe that teams are able to really hold those double teams on him. But Todd Gurley needs to be special, and I don't know if he can be special ever again. He's on a pitch count. They're trying to get him to the finish line and hope that they can use him and turn his, you know, turn his attempts up in the playoffs. But you got to get to the playoffs, and you want to be able to host, you know, so that you can use that crowd noise against the opposing team and keep Jared Goff protected.
You can't be – they are treating Todd Gurley like an all-time great running back who is at the very end of his career, who they hope can peak in December and January if you limit his touches.
Load management is what they call it now.
You can't load manage a guy in year five. You can't – year five. You can't – for Todd Gurley, a player who in 2017 and 2018 was the best player on the Rams offense, a Rams offense that in 2017 and 2018 was top five in rushing both years and now is outside of the top 20 in rushing, and a player who earned that enormous contract extension based on what he did his first year under Sean McVay, that guy all of a sudden having the level of production of some guy you bring in off the street who you don't know if he's a starting running back in this league, that's a disaster for this team. It is as if, I think we need to, and it's unfortunate, but look at the Rams through the prism of what if in the preseason Todd Gurley tore his ACL and was out for the year? How would we then say the Rams offense is going to look? Because while Todd Gurley is still there with the name on the back of the jersey, what that name represents is totally different in 2019 in early October than it was in 2018 or 2017 in early October.
Well, one thing, as far as this offense, once it came into the league, the league had seen it, but it had been a while since they'd seen this version of it. And they are a power, like you said, they are a power downhill running team. So if you put seven in the box against the Rams 2 years before this, they're going to run the ball. And they're going to eat up that clock, and they're going to set you up for play action pass. If you put eight in the box, even though they would run the ball to the weak side of the defense. Ty Gurley would break off some of those runs for some of the most fantastic runs you've ever seen. Yeah. So you're like, can't put eight in the box. If they went to throw the ball, there's no safety or linebackers that could guard him out of the backfield when he's in I formation. So all those advantages that you did have, now you don't have them. And they still run in the same system. They're still trying to go three wide outs, one back, one tight end, and the league has caught on to it. That is not a myth. Once you start in this league as a coach or in as a player, they come up with a game plan for you. And they have one now for the Rams without Todd Gurley being special. And it's going to be hard for them because their quarterback is not an elite thrower. He is not an elevator. Well, he could be an elevator to bring you down. but he's not the one to be able to raise a whole organization at this point in his career.
Teams are going cover three and making sure that they have both of the edges covered. So when you bring that ghost type of, you know, motion with Cooks or whoever, Robert Woods, what happens is now you have the edges set, so it doesn't affect you. You don't have to rotate your safeties. I can see them maybe going out and taking a flyer on a guy like Jay Ajayi, who looks like he's maybe ready to audition for some teams. You saw that, you know, when C.J. Anderson came, the offense looks much better, you know, than with Todd Gurley, and then maybe to try and be able to preserve him even longer.
But, Nick, you said earlier you can't load manage a 25-year-old. What can you do with him, though? You're not getting rid of him this year, so how do you use him?
Let me get here. You make excuses. That's what you do. Anytime there was a game and I was in my prime and then the ball didn't go to me, there's three reasons. Either someone shut me down, either I'm injured, or someone on the Vikings decided not to give me the ball. Those are the only reasons. There is no other excuses. Oh, no. He is an elite player, one of the best we've ever seen. Right now, let's have a fantasy draft. Just of the Georgia running backs. Okay?
Chubb goes one without question. And then Sony Michel, even in a down year.
I don't care. I'll take him.
Take him over Todd Gurley.
And that's the overall reality, Nick, that the Rams face.
And the problem was, though, that they went down 21-0 in this game early. You know, Jameis Winston was on, and they went down. And Todd Gurley did touch the ball seven times, in, you know, receiving. You know, they tried to get the ball to him in space, which is an extension of the running game. They just went down so fast, but it is an issue because they still haven't even told us really what the problem was in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Nothing's wrong with it.
Let me tell you something. You let the Dallas Cowboys give Zeke the ball five times. You think that security guard had a hard time with Zeke in Vegas this summer? They will have to clear out the sideline. He'll be throwing stuff. L. Bell with the Jets. Can you imagine him only touching the ball five times? Something's wrong, man. There's no excuses. But when I've given you guaranteed money, I like you because they like Todd Gurley.
Yeah, good.
He's very marketable, a very good guy. They're not gonna let the cat out the bag. But the truth is, dude is damaged good.
I think Chris has been nailing this for the last 8 months, ever since we first heard not only the report of the arthritis, but that even in training camp, he was going to be on a load management thing. That is not what you do with a player his age in year five. And the problem is, for these discussions, is the Rams have to lie to us. Yeah. They cannot tell us the truth. They have to tell us, no, it's part of the plan, because otherwise it betrays the player.
Yep.
Todd Gurley does not want them to tell the whole world that this is all he can handle,
that this is who he is.
So you've got to lie to us. And I don't begrudge him that. This is one of those good lies. Like, there's no victim in it. I understand why they're doing it. But no matter what you say, on Sunday you got to play.
And from a legal standpoint, their doctors are not allowed to reveal the information of a patient. And that patient is Todd Gurley. They're going to take this one to the grave.
They'll cut him when his guaranteed money's up.
Well, I believe before that. Yeah, I believe before that.
Moving on to the Vikings now, not exactly the way they wanted to start their season. Last place in the division after falling to the Bears on Sunday. Their quarterback has been exceptionally average, and their offense has been downright anemic, averaging the second fewest passing yards per game in the league. Pro Bowl wide receiver Adam Thielen knows this offense needs to get better and fast.
At some point, you're not going to be able to run the ball for 180 yards, even with the best running back in the NFL. And that's when you have to be able to throw the ball. You have to be able to make plays. You have to be able to, you know, hit the ball, the deep balls. You have to do that because otherwise it's too easy for teams to just tee up and rush the quarterback. So we have to be able to run the ball and pass the ball. In this league, you cannot be one-dimensional.
All right, Bart, what do you think about what Adam Thielen said?
Hater in the house.
Why?
No, I'm telling you, Kirk Cousins is horrible. We knew he was horrible. We knew he was nothing but a glorified game manager. You know, and Washington knew it. That's why they let him walk out the door. You know, and, you know, when you look at what he's been able to do, and I thank you for not coming to the Jets. I appreciate that. Now that's starting to like a bad contract. This was a team that made a move for the top quarterback in the market because they thought that they were close. And they were close. I think they were the cream of the division. But now you see that now that the Chicago Bears have closed the gap and then passed them, and you see the Green Bay Packers have passed them, and maybe the Lions have passed them. So if they can't get to the playoffs this year and you can't get out of this contract, I look at, you know, the Minnesota Vikings doing whatever they can to move up in the draft for either Herbert, Fromm, Tua, or do whatever they have to do because the window was closing. You know, Everson Griffin is getting older. You look at Diggs, they're still in their prime. But they spent a lot of money at the top of their
They have a lot of expensive players.
Yeah, they have expensive players. Just re-signed Anthony Barr, you know, who shunned the Jets again. But, you know, that when you have, you know, you're spending this much money and you don't have that much salary cap space, you have to take it from somewhere, and they've taken it from the offensive line. Well, Kirk Cousins needs offensive line. He needs all things being perfect so he can have the guts to deliver the ball down the field. And he doesn't want to throw the ball down the field because he has too much scar tissue.
Well, so the your point about the Vikings clearly looked at last year and this year as a championship window,
yep.
And they went out and don't sacrifice good in the pursuit of perfect at all times, right? They knew Kirk Cousins wasn't the perfect quarterback, but they also knew he was better than Case Keenum. Teddy Bridgewater, they didn't know if they could trust as far as his health, and Sam Bradford was the definition of damaged goods. So they went out and they paid for him. They went out and got him. The problem is exactly what you're talking about. With the money they paid him plus the money they paid to keep all that high-level talent on their roster, so many of those guys, and a lot of those are borrowed from Peter to pay Paul contracts, meaning you're going to have to pare this roster down starting next season.
Yep.
And they did that because they thought 2 years ago could have won the damn – gone to the Super Bowl if not for the – you got to the NFC Championship game, I should say, after the Minneapolis Miracle. So we'll upgrade at quarterback. Last year, Cousins wasn't good enough. This year, he has been a detracting force from their overall success. We can – the 31st in the NFL in passing is a little misleading because week one, they won that game,
yeah.
And he only threw 10 passes. So take that out of it. They're still averaging 210 yards per game passing over the next 3 weeks. And Cousins, throughout his entire career, 32 games against winning teams, two full seasons worth, 5 wins. 17 games in prime time, a full season's worth, 4 wins. Those are problems, particularly when you are not brought in to just be a caretaker. You're brought in to help this team take the next step, which they've been trying to do forever, and right now he's working in the opposite direction.
And if we go back to free agency, the Vikings didn't have many options.
Correct.
All right? Yep. They could sign Chase to a 2 to 3 year deal. They had no choice to try to improve their quarterback. Their quarterback play has improved, even though the team hadn't gotten better. The offensive line is not as good as it was 3 years ago, 2 years ago. So Kirk Cousins is going to suffer from that. As far as his contract, they're not overpaying for him. If you look at where the quarterbacks are making their money, what's he's accomplished in this league, $28 million is about the number that you're going to get a quarterback like Kirk Cousins. I'm not going to overreact because I watch, of course, all the Vikings games. The first game, you got to throw that one out because of Atlanta. They dominated Atlanta running the ball with Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook is the star of this team and of this franchise. And they need to try to put as much support around him as possible. They have enough wide receivers. They have tight ends, but that offensive line, and because of the pie is only so big. So they didn't have a lot of resources. They spent the first round draft capital to get a center. He's helped improve the line. They did. It makes a couple moves in free agency. But you let me know a team that's going to play 2 out of 3 weeks at Green Bay and at Chicago,
right, so,
and going to come out with some great numbers. So let me know the team, because I don't know that team. You go to Lambeau Field, all right, and then they're one play away from winning the game in Lambeau Field after being down 21-0. The game in Chicago was not good because it was a mismatch up front. But if he hits Thielen when he's wide open with that post corner early in the game, that could be a good different game because Chicago is not going to score a whole bunch of points. So I'm not going to overreact. The offensive line is still a work in progress. But Dalvin Cook is the star on that offense that does have some good receivers.
Well, Carson Wentz went into Lambeau Field and dominated, you know, the Green Bay Packers up front. And I would ask you this. Would you take Andy Dalton or would you take Kirk Cousins?
Cousins.
I'd rather take Andy Dalton. I think Andy Dalton's a much better quarterback than Kirk Cousins. I think we elevated Kirk Cousins too far because of some of the highlights. It's easy to throw for yards when your team is always behind. When he was in Washington, I think those were a lot of inflated numbers because he was always behind. He was always throwing the ball down the field, and he had a perfect situation. I think Kyle Rudolph is really, like, we thought that he was going to be the guy that was going to be able to continue to elevate. He's on the decline early mm-hmm. in his career. They don't get any production from him anymore, and they have too much money tied up into too many players.
But I think the problem is if you're making a Kirk Cousins-Andy Dalton comparison, then the Vikings have lost because they didn't bring him in to be Andy Dalton. I understand the Chris's point that it's not like the free quarterbacks hit the free agent market. If you're in the market for a quarterback,
yeah.
You already have a problem. It's why teams right. hold on to their draft picks as long as they do, and it's very rare a quarterback that has any level of accomplishment hits unrestricted free agency. That's why he got the first ever fully guaranteed deal. But they need him at a minimum to be as good as Matt Stafford. At a minimum, if when you brought him into the division, you said he's not going to be Aaron Rodgers. Can he be the second best quarterback in our division? And can the rest of our team offset the difference between Rodgers and Cousins? He hasn't been that. And that's been a big problem for them in the NFC, where 2-2 means you only have a better record than three teams right now.
Yeah, they don't get help by being in the division at all. WWE Friday Night SmackDown debuts on Fox this Friday, 7:30 Eastern. To celebrate SmackDown's 20th anniversary, we built a ring outside the studio. Very nicely done. And joining us to break it all down is WWE Chief Brand Officer Stephanie McMahon. Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is wonderful. I thought I was going to have to put on my referee stripes when it came to the quarterback conversation.
Well, that was our request. That was a request. Every day.
The tensions were running high on that one.
Oh, no. We about once a show, Chris gets something wrong, so we got to disagree a bit. But
see how that works.
You're just going to let him get away with that?
Just like you're the Chief Brand Officer. I'm the Chief Brand Officer around here.
I got it. All right, Stephanie, let's dive in here. What does it mean for you and the whole WWE, the whole roster to be paired up with Fox? How exciting is this time of year, and how's exciting leading up to October 4th?
Words really can't describe how excited we are. This is a partnership that I think has been many, many years in the making, if not destined to be. I mean, Fox is the best at live television, the best at sports, the best at events, and I like to think that WWE is the same, so we're, I think, a perfect match, perfect tag team, if you will.
I would say the biggest change in the WWE in my lifetime as a fan is the role of women in as far as as tertiary characters as opposed to now headlining WrestleMania.
Yes, right.
I'm not pigeonholing you because you're a woman, but I also know that your background was a lot of starting that initiative, putting effort behind that initiative. Why was that important, and how successful has that been for you guys?
It's incredibly important. I mean, especially when you consider that, you know, there's a huge knock against women's sports. Oh, there's no ratings, there's no attendance. Well, that's a lot because there's not a lot of promotion for women's sports. And then you take a look at WWE, where we had the opportunity, and our fans actually demanded that we, quote, give divas a chance, which was how we branded our women's division at the time. They started a hashtag that trended for 3 days worldwide, specifically calling for better athleticism, better matches, better storytelling, better character development, because we really are this mashup of sports and entertainment. And Vince McMahon, my father, chairman and CEO, said, "We hear you, keep watching, hashtag give divas a chance." And then we launched at WrestleMania, which is akin to our Super Bowl, over 101,000 people at AT&T Stadium. We rebranded the Divas division to the Women's division, announced our women would now be called Superstars, same as the men. And they got a new championship belt that was more akin to the men's, but still very feminine. And since that time, they've been regularly headlining and main eventing, and WrestleMania was certainly no exception. Took 35 years for us to get there, but that took place in front of a capacity crowd of over 80,000 people at MetLife Stadium and broke the entertainment revenue record.
So you guys have done a great job as far as the rebranding, but as far as how do we explain this to the people that WWE, it's new to them, and on Friday, trying to generate more interest in the sport, why should people tune in to watch SmackDown on Friday?
Because they're going to see something that they've never seen before. You know, it truly is a spectacle, and it is the best combination of sports and entertainment. So when you break down the storytelling piece, it's no different than anything else that's out there. It's protagonist versus antagonist with conflict resolution. The only difference is that our conflicts are settled inside a 20 by 20 foot ring with some of the greatest live action that you can see in any sport or entertainment property.
Is that why you think it's had such a broad appeal outside an athletic audience or just that entertainment audience? I mean, it seems like you have fans from across various either generations or various demographics that just are so drawn into it.
Absolutely, and it really is family viewing. It is generational viewing. And because it's so easy to relate to, because I think the best stories are the ones that are relatable, it translates. So we're in 180 countries and over 28 languages.
Wow.
Fourth most viewed YouTube channel in the world. Really because of that relatability, and plus over 200 different characters, you know, that are their own individual IP, which gives you even more opportunity to engage.
I mentioned to you before we went on the air that I was at what I believe was the very first SmackDown ever, if not the very first, one of the first 20 years ago in Kansas City. So I came up in the Attitude Era, in the era where your brother is jumping off Hell's in the Cell
He's
through
still,
tables,
still doing that.
And where you were more active in the ring. What What are some of your best memories prior to Chief Brand Officer when you were in the ring more often?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I did have to wrestle my father in what was maybe the first ever father-daughter match 6 days before my actual wedding. So that was an interesting moment. My mom was so mad at my dad. She said, if you give her a black eye, she gets a black eye for her wedding. I'm going to kill you. So that was a very interesting moment. But actually, it was only about 2 years ago that I did wrestle Rowdy Ronda Rousey. So it was sans attitude era. It was after I've married and had three daughters, and I had the chance to wrestle Ronda in her first ever match in WWE. And that was a huge moment with my husband, Triple H, as my tag team partner against Kurt Angle and Ronda. And Kurt's an Olympic gold medalist, and Ronda's an Olympic medalist as well. So, yeah, I had my work cut out for me.
Yeah, bad
news. I lost.
Yeah, bad news, good news. Bad news is, you heard it, guys, she's married to Triple H. Good news is she's got three daughters.
Would you
encourage your daughters to be involved in the sport once they become of age where they could make that choice?
My oldest daughter has already started training, and I would encourage them to follow their passion, you know, whatever they believe in, as long as they work hard at it. You know, I believe in a strong work ethic, and I believe they can do anything in the world they want to do, but they're going to have to believe in themselves and work hard.
Nick mentioned you thought you were at the first SmackDown of 150 years ago, even though you're like
20 years ago. 20th anniversary,
18 years old. What do you think the secret is to WWE's staying power? It seems so relevant year after year.
Well, again, I think it goes back to that relatability, you know, just engaging with our audience, and not just engaging with our audience, but letting them know that their voice matters. What they do impacts what we do, and we wouldn't have a product without them. You know, I could go into our various strategies, whether it's our pop culture strategy or, you know, et cetera, but really it is about just keeping that connection with your audience.
Chris mocks me because I love to make lists, and so if we were making a list of biggest WWE superstars ever, obviously Hulk's on there, Stone Cold Steve Austin,
the
Undertaker.
Rock, who's going to be
Rock,
there?
Well, you stole
on
it
Friday.
From me. On Friday, on
it
SmackDown.
It doesn't matter what your nickname. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, well, but SmackDown, which may have been named because of one of The Rock's catchphrases back in the day.
Yes, absolutely.
So The Rock going to be there Friday. Tell the audience about it if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, The Rock is going to be there on Friday. On Friday Night SmackDown this Friday, live on Fox at 8 o'clock Eastern. And he's going to layeth the smacketh down on the entire audience. I can't wait to see what he's going to do.
Any comebacks in your future?
I can't give that away.
Okay. All right. It's on the board. It's on the board.
Anything can happen in WWE.
Mom's still training. That's what that means.
A mother-daughter tag team.
There you go.
No, it's not. But
mother-daughter, grandfather, triple threat match.
Stephanie, thank you so much. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to Fox.
It's a privilege to be a part of the family. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.